Let's see how this goes. It says we're not connected, but I think we're connected now. Fritzbergbloodandfaith.com. We're just getting warmed up here. And I'm going to adjust a couple of settings over here. How's everybody doing this morning? Weekend, Sunday, Labor Day weekend, 10:29. And that mic's kind of hot, which is not a bad thing. And we'll get her started, I think, really, really quickly, like right about now. I'm going to push a little button here, and we'll start recording a video feed as well. All right. Well, Labor Day weekend. I'm not sure what that means to anybody anymore, but at the very least, we get an extra day off. Most of us, not all of us, those of us in government work do. Many companies do, but not all. I've worked at places where everybody works on the holidays, including the day after Thanksgiving and all that good stuff. I want to talk about power this morning. You know, what is power? And most of the time, the conception of power is the ability to exert kinetic force, physical force, violent force against somebody in order to physically coerce them into obedience. Therefore, you have a large standing army in a country, for example. Now, these days, they don't call it a standing army, but when you have police forces, federal police forces that number in the tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, that certainly can be construed as a standing army. But that's not the most efficient use of power. The most efficient use of power and the type of power that is most prevalent in the United States today and is barely noticed in the United States today, and believe me, that we do have a standing army, and physical coercion and violence is absolutely used in this country to enforce whatever the regime's dictates and wishes are. And by regime, I don't mean just the politicians. It's a big club, and you and I aren't in it. Our vote is meaningless. Our vote is virtually meaningless. All a vote does is it serves to legitimize the regime in the minds of the governed. The vote in the United States today serves to legitimize the government by those that are governed. Say, hey, you can vote for Johnny or you can vote for Susie. Oh, we're going to vote for Johnny. So Johnny gets in and his policies are virtually indistinguishable from Susie's. And everybody does a little golf clap and said, see what a great democracy we live in. It's all a fraud. If somebody shows up and they protest and say, well, I don't think that was a legitimate election. I think this other person really won. Well, we're going to throw you in jail. Now, that's kinetic power. When you get arrested, that's a kinetic action on the governed. When government employees show up with weapons, and they either shoot you to death, as we've seen a few of those in the last week, they chain you, and they put you in chain, and they haul you before another government official who assigns you to live in a steel cage for perhaps decades of your life, that's kinetic power. Kinetic power is not the most efficient type of power out there. Kinetic power is very noticeable. And it serves a couple of functions. One, yes, you can get rid of the problematic people. Perhaps a bigger function of that kinetic power, where government workers point weapons at people, shoot them to death, chain them, and throw them in steel cages, is the intimidation factor. All the other little monkeys look, and they go, oh boy, don't do that. The gorilla's going to throw you in jail, because most human beings are timid. Most human beings are sheep, and that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Jesus Christ described people as sheep. Jesus Christ described people as sheep. Look, he says, I see the sheep wandering. You're like sheep without a shepherd. There's no leader for them, and they're just being beaten and harassed. Imagine if everybody on the planet was you know, type A, headstrong, independent, nobody's going to tell me what to do kind of person. It'd be hard to get along. It's hard to get along in a family that way. But by and large, people are sheep. They can be led. They can be guided. They can be threatened. They can be bullied. They can be abused. But by and large, it's if you've ever worked with sheep, I have a little bit. I had the pleasure of spending time on a sheep ranch in Montana. And we went, what did we do? We castrated the little baby, we castrated the lambs. And so I was involved in that process. It's really amazing what you can do with several hundred sheep. Get several hundred sheep and a couple of border collies, and it's really amazing how much those sheep want to stay together, and how willing they are to be guided into a certain direction so they can be controlled and processed properly. Human beings are much the same way. A more efficient way of controlling people is to control the sea of words that they use. Now, you may say that this goes to the heart of the First Amendment, and it what I am saying is what the First Amendment is based upon. The First Amendment is about limiting the power of the governing structure to enforce a certain set of words that are permissible and non-permissible upon the governed. In other words, you can't say this, you can't say that, and you must say this, and you must say that. That is a vastly more efficient way of governing, of controlling the governed. At this point, it's almost useless to talk about citizens in the United States. It's a great concept, but we're not treated as citizens. Once upon a time in America, government officials were not called government officials. They were called public servants. Now they're officials. They're government officials. The officials say. They were trained. Again, the words were trained. You're not a public servant. You're an official. The authorities. This is a vastly more efficient way of controlling a populace. You replace one set of words with another. They're not public servants anymore. They're the authorities. And if you do it well, people don't even notice the change. They're no longer public servants. They're no longer employees paid for by your tax dollars. They're to serve you and to carry out certain functions for the betterment of the community. They're the authorities. You need to listen to authority, and how much more in the public school classroom. I'm almost, you know, my kids are of such an age that it's a little late to worry about this, but I'm almost becoming a non-schooler. At the very least, a homeschooler. I've seen where my kids go to school. It is a physical prison as well as an intellectual prison. And they do it for their safety. For your safety. We're going to video every moment of your existence on school grounds. For your safety. You're going to have to cart in and cart out. We're going to track your every arrival and departure. For your safety, we're going to put government employees with weapons around the property for your safety. Of course, it doesn't stop there, does it? It doesn't stop at that, does it? Just down the road from me, there's a school called the Vanguard School, and you had an authority figure who told a child that the child cannot wear a little 2-inch by 3-inch flag that was very commonly used in the revolutionary period in the United States of America. And she made a bogus claim as to what that symbol represented. She clearly doesn't know anything. She just knows that that symbol represents something against her totalitarian and authoritarian instincts. And indeed, that is true. That's absolutely true. The Gadsden flag represents an American stand against totalitarianism and a despot government. But since she represented that totalitarian and despotic government called a school principal, where they're going to make their decisions arbitrarily, she said, you can't even have a symbol out there. Otherwise, we'll kick you out of school. Of course, it went viral, went nationwide, and she had to back down. But not she didn't back down on principle. She was simply outmaneuvered. And again, we send our children to government schools. They're not public schools. They're government schools. And in these government schools, we are told what you can say, what you cannot say, and that you must ask permission every time you want to do something. You have to ask. You have to be carded. You have to have ID on you 24/7 and submit it to the authorities and get permission if you want to do anything. So you send kids to this prison-like system for 18 years. And you've trained them to obey the authorities. You've trained them to not say forbidden words and to say the encouraged words. We live in a totalitarian society. It may be different than the old Soviet Union. We don't have the political gulags like the Russians did in the 50s and 60s and 70s. We do have the largest prison population on the planet. Generally, they're full of people who, well, certainly they committed crimes. I'm not even going to go there. Of course, they committed murder, rape, drugs, whatever. And that is the kinetic type of force that I've been talking about. The more efficient way is you tell people what they can and cannot say. So, for example, in the public schools, and they're just kind of the basic arena in which you formulate the minds of the populace, the minds of the government, you tell them that the Bible is just some book, and you remove the Holy Scriptures from the curricula. I don't know how many generations it's been now. When I was a kid, nobody read the Bible. I think in seventh grade there was a Bible as literature class, 1970s. But all growing up through public schools, through government schools, nobody read the Bible. The Bible didn't exist. I do remember in second grade the Ten Commandments were still on the wall. God bless the subversive principles that allowed that. By that time, the Supreme Court had probably declared it illegal, but they just said, well, forget you. I asked them, what are those? They said, that's the Ten Commandments. I said, what are the Ten Commandments? They said, those are the commandments of God. And I'm reading them. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not commit adultery. I didn't know what adultery was, but I thought, you know, well, that's interesting. Thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not lie. Honor your father and mother. Take a Sunday off. Obey the Sabbath. And I was, you know, to this day, half a century later, I still vividly remember the Ten Commandments in that conversation with that teacher. That's been outlawed in America. So the more efficient way to use power is to remove words and terms that the power regime does not want you to have and to impose a different set of words and terms that they want you to have, such as thou shalt not be racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, divisive, or anti-Semitic. And you're taught for 18 years, plus undergraduate school and graduate school, then you're indoctrinated in sessions in your place of employment on what it means, and it's beaten into your brain. Well, this is what it means. Don't you think it would be offensive if a white man just sort of showed up into it? Isn't that racist and imposing? And they come up with all these things. And what is also very well said in there is that is you will not get promoted if you don't actively promote this mental regime, this structure, this power structure. And if any of this sounds like Gramsci and Foucault, it should. And I'm going to tie it to the Holy Scriptures in a minute, meaning maybe a half hour from now, maybe in a different podcast. But words are the central mechanism of freedom and control. And controlling the body of words, the sea of words that your mind swims in, is vastly more efficient than sticks and clubs and bullets and jails and chains. Oh, those things work. But trust me, they work. Castro, Cuba under Castro, the Soviet Union under Stalin, China under Mao and a current group of totalitarians, the United States of America in 2023, where we're putting men in jail for decades because they have ideas that are different than the ruling power. Make no mistake about it. These people that showed up on January 6th and got arrested and are still in jail, those are political prisoners. We have political prisoners in the United States of America. They're political prisoners. Trump is now being charged with political crimes. It's a crime to challenge an election. It would be funny if it wasn't so serious, but they have so much power and they're so afraid of a backlash that they've pulled out all the stops. And they're hoping they can intimidate enough people into submitting and obeying. And when you fail to rule through the use of language, you have to turn to kinetic force. And that's where the United States is again. They failed to conquer all of the masses. They've conquered most of them. But it might be hovering right around 50%. And they're terrified they're going to lose power because hopefully, and I pray to God that people's eyes are waking up. I'm worried about the church. I think the church is asleep. I think they've bought into the whole lies of the devil. And I talk about that quite a bit at bloodandfaith.com. They fear the world. They fear the world, and they want to be accepted and loved by the world. And so they won't say anything that's could be conceived of as racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, divisive, or anti-Semitic. So in a ways, they are part of an evil regime. In a way, many of the preachers in the churches are part of the evil regime because they back it up and they legitimize the substitution of one set of words for another set of words. They tell their congregation to submit and obey. The church is part of the problem. Not all churches. It never is. Remember good old Elijah? Oh, Lord. I alone am left. The Lord said, no, Elijah, you're not. I have 7,000 more men that have not bent the knee to Baal. So there's at least 7,000 other men out there that have not bent the knee to Baal. But there's a lot of preachers that have. There's a lot of preachers that have bent the knee to Baal. And they value their friendship with the world vastly more than their loyalty to Jesus Christ. And they've joined the fraternity of Judas Iscariot. Preachers all over America have joined the fraternity of Judas Iscariot. Called of God, chosen of God, preaching the gospel, praying for healing the sick, casting out demons. Intimately familiar with Jesus Christ. Psalm 55. You used to go along with me in the throng in the temple of God. We had sweet fellowship together, the psalmist said. Speaking of Jesus Christ with Judas Iscariot, then becomes a traitor. And to the very end, Judas Iscariot, he comes up to Jesus, Rabbi, Lord, hail, Rabbi, and gives him a kiss. To the very end, a public demonstration of loyalty to Jesus Christ, when he had none, when he really had sided with the Jews. Siding with the Jews is treason against Jesus Christ. Always has been, always will be. And Christians and pastors out there that have joined the fraternity of Judas Iscariot, called, chosen, preaching, devil casting out, healing the sick, public affirmations of that, you know, hail, Rabbi, Jesus is Lord. And yet they've sided with the Jews. They've made a compact with the Jews, and the Jews love them. But they've betrayed Jesus Christ, and the Jews leave them alone. The Jews leave them. How many churches are out there preaching that that Jesus Christ told the Jews to their faces, you're the devil's children? I've never heard that from the pulpit in my lifetime. I've certainly heard from many Christians and preachers that the Jews are God's chosen people. Maybe that's why I hammer this so much. So it's a big fat problem. Oh, you're anti-Semitic, Fritz. What's wrong with that? Where in the Bible says you cannot be an anti-Semite? If Jesus Christ looks at the Jews in context, he says, listen, you're the devil's children. Excuse me, I want to be like my master. I want to be right in lockstep with my master, with my king. I didn't join a morality club. I'm loyal to a monarch named Jesus Christ. And your morality is not my morality. My morality is what Jesus Christ says. It has nothing to do with not being racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, device for anti-Semitic. But these are the words that govern our society. This is the soft power. It's vastly more efficient. So you're indoctrinated in your school, in your grad school, in your workplace, in the Boy Scouts, everywhere you go. Well, you can't be racist, and you can't be anti-Semitic. I volunteered for a leadership position, a servant position. It's just basic grunt work for a good organization. And they went online and they did a little research on my name, and they said, you can't participate at all in any position in this organization. We're happy to take your money. You keep giving us your money. We'll keep you on our email list. But you're bordering on an anti-Semite. I think they were trying to be kind, because I guess to be accused of anti-Semitism is pretty horrendous crime, pretty horrendous moral violation. So they were trying to be gentle. I said, well, you're just bordering on it, because they wanted to be gentle and not be too offensive to me. And these were good men, conservative, politically conservative men. And so this is how those men are controlled. And they will go out of their way to demonstrate that they're not racist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, divisive, or anti-Semitic. Some of them will be bold enough and say, we can't support, tranny book reading time in the library. And they think they're all bold because they're willing to come out and say that. I mean, that's the state of American manhood right there. They think they're bold because they're against the tranny book clubs it for kindergartners. And they'll actually say something about it. Not very many men, though. Not even very many men will. And this is part of the demoralization project that has gone on in the United States of America. We need to demoralize people so they know that there's absolutely nothing they can do that will make a difference. Again, power is more efficiently wielded when you control what is permitted to be said and not said. More efficient than kinetic force, although kinetic force will be used. I'm going to post a little something up in Blood and Faith about this, define it a little more intellectually. The problem with the intellectual side of things is, in the day of Instagram, somebody put Instagram on my phone, the other one, my kids, and it's addicting, man. It's bad addicting. I can understand the decline and fall of American civilization with Instagram right there. It's terrible. Next thing you know, 20 minutes have gone by. What have you done? Well, I looked at some really cool memes. You know what I'm talking about. The cat and the dog are playing together. It's so cute. Or whatever else is out there. Some are political, some are a bit salacious, some are, just fun. Moose in the woods, bears chasing people. Words are the most powerful form of control and liberty and freedom. It's words. And the neat thing about words is it's a tool and a device that literally anybody that knows how to speak can use. 50 years ago, people didn't grow up saying, oh my God, I might be homophobic. Never entered their mind that they might be transphobic. Wasn't even a thing. Wasn't even invented yet. Well, I guess it was. I take that back. Apparently, they had a real problem with that in Weimar Germany, 1920s in Germany. Think there was a backlash against that stuff? I think there was. I think there was a big backlash against it. But 50 years ago, when I was a kid, look, I went through high school. I went through government high school. I think I was a junior or senior before I even heard somebody whisper that somebody might be a homosexual. And I'm like, I didn't believe. I said, I didn't even know the person. So it wasn't like I knew the person and said, no, they can't be. It was just, yeah, that is just, how can, there's just, that's not possible. How can anybody do that? No. Y'all are making this up. It can't be. That's beyond the realm of even comprehension. And now, it's as mainstream as the yellow dotted line going down the middle of the road. A change in language, a change in rhetoric. You take the Ten Commandments, you throw them in the trash, and you promote homosexuality in your government schools in the name of tolerance and diversity. Next thing you know, you can't be transphobic, queerphobic, you can be intolerant towards the people that can be accused of being racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, divisive, and anti-Semitic. You're supposed to be totally intolerant of them, but you have to tolerate and embrace and promote sodomy and the butchering of children as they try to cut out body parts. This is as evil as anything they ever did in Sodom and Gomorrah, and our culture deserves the same end as Sodom and Gomorrah came. However, let's go back to the power structure. What happens if a man comes out and said, hey, this is evil. Butchering live children is evil. Well, he's called homophobic and transphobic. What happens if a man comes out and said, homosexuality ought to be illegal? Well, he's homophobic. Clearly, that's against our democratic values. And people don't like to be accused of these moral crimes that are not crimes at all. And then they see what happens to people who violate these immoral moralities, these perverted norms. Man comes out and says, homosexuality is fundamentally evil. Deeply and fundamentally evil. Oh, they make an example out of that, man. Punish them. I mean, in the very simple basis, you're going to, you know, you're not that y'all have Facebook anymore. I don't know if that's a thing. I had my 3 strikes and I was out there. It happened really quickly, too. I simply made a decision one day in my life. I said, you know what? Screw y'all. I'm going to speak my piece. You don't like it? That's too bad. But at a certain point, a man has to stand up and say, I'm going to be a man. I'm going to speak my conscience. Otherwise, he's not a man. Took me a long time to become a man. I admit it. Took me a long time. You're always looking for a way to slide it in there, a way so you can avoid the pain, a way to avoid the punishment, a way to be loved by the world. I finally just jumped off the deep end. I said, my life's not worth living if I can't speak my conscience. Not every man makes that decision. But I have a duty more than just to my own conscience. I have a duty to my children and my grandchildren and to my God and to my ancestors. And one of the biggest things that drove me to speaking my conscience was watching all the young men go to the Middle East for a couple decades and getting butchered and blown up, hoping and believing that there are wiser men back at home that were guiding their nation and that their sacrifice would be worth it. And it was all a lie, all an utter lie. I almost sound like a Vietnam vet now. They went through that a few years before I was of age. You go over there, you fight, and you die, and you get blown up, you come back in pieces, and then you're tossed aside. And you go, why? What was this for? Fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them here, and yet they take over here. They've taken over here in the United States of America. These evil anti-Christ, anti-white people. And they control us by saying, you can't be racist. What does racist mean? It means anything they want us to, anything they want, anything they don't like is going to be called racist or sexist or anti-Semitic or xenophobic. Advocating for the white race is the most hideous thing anybody can do. Oh, you're a Hitler. You're a Nazi. But you can advocate for the black race or the Latin race, whatever you want to call the Latins. I don't know these days. Mexicans, Hispanics, Chicanos, Latinos. I don't care what you call it. That's okay, but you can't advocate for the white race. You can advocate for the Jews, but not for the white. Because it's not racist for the Jews to advocate for the Jews, but it's racist for the whites to advocate for the whites. And I wish the church would just open up its mind and read the Holy Scriptures. So it's a very powerful tool. Now, the nice thing about this tool is it can be used both ways. And I have made a choice in my life to use it in a certain way. I will advocate for what my conscience declares. And I will do that by opening up my mouth and speaking. No more, but by God Almighty, no less. By God Almighty, by my ancestors, my God, and my descendants, no less than that. I will open up my mouth, so help me God, and I will speak. Got these young men going over there in these wars, these worthless wars over in the Middle East, coming in body bags, and I don't have the courage to open my mouth and speak. Shame on me. Shame on me, because I'm afraid somebody might call me racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, divisive, or anti-Semitic. Shame on me. I surrendered my man card a long time ago. If I can't stand up and speak my conscience when young men come back in body bags, believing there's older, wiser men guiding our country, and it's all a sham, it's all a lie. So at some point in my life, I remember when, and I just said, you know what, I have to do something different, and I started speaking and writing. And oh gosh, are they pissed now? Man, they're pissed. The regime is pissed. Now, the regime isn't just Joseph Biden. He's simply a titular figurehead. Go back and read the book of Esther. Reread it with new eyes. King Ahasuerus was always there. He was the public head of the government. But there's other people behind the scenes who excel in exercising power in a multi-ethnic, multicultural environment. So now apparently I've got their attention. I don't want to give them too much credit, but they're doing what they do. They're just doing what they do. They're trying to exercise soft power by punishing those who speak of ideas and things that they disapprove of. They haven't yet thrown me in jail. And here's how it works. Here's how it works. In Europe, I could go to jail. In Germany or Sweden or England, I could probably go to jail. Canada, too. Because there's laws on the books against whatever, things that I say, things that are right out of the Holy Scriptures. I had an article written about me in a news story, you know, the video, the whole nine yards. And they were astonished that in 2023, I could still say the things I was saying. They haven't figured out a way to throw me in jail yet. But here's what happens. January Sixers. And just by the way, I was on a completely different continent when that happened. They don't throw him in jail because they had a different political opinion. What they did is, oh, you stepped across this line. You moved a barrier. You conspired to overturn the government. And they find another way to get you. Now, if that had been BLM or Antifa, they would have been praised and let go, which is exactly what happened when they had the BLM and Antifa riots. But they're on the side of the regime. They're not anti-anything. They're pro-regime. They're pro-totalitarian. They're the brown shirts of 2023. They're the unofficial enforcers of order in 2023. Extra-governmental, violent enforcers of the political direction that the quote-unquote authorities want to drive people in, drive people toward. So what they'll do is they say, oh, we're not throwing you in jail because you have dissident political ideas. Oh, no, we respect the Constitution. We're going to throw you in jail because you stepped off the sidewalk. We're throwing you in jail because, I don't know, look at the pro-life protesters. Thrown in jail all the time while BLM and Antifa go free. What really offended them was their ideas, not their actions. And this is what they're doing for Donald Trump. Well, we're going to find a way to screw over his life. Doesn't matter if he did anything illegal or not. The process, you all have read Bonfire of Vanities? Wonderful book. I can't remember, 80s, 90s? I can't remember, 80s. Tom Wolfe. Worth reading. One of the main characters in the book, he is going through a legal situation. And whether he gets convicted or not, or goes to jail or not, doesn't matter. His fortune is gone. The process is the punishment. And so that's what they're doing to these J6ers. Some are still rotting in jail. They don't have any money. They're just normal Americans. And they're not members of Antifa or BLM. They're voting for a man that is against the power regime that rules the United States today. I don't know. That's questionable. There's a lot of talk about that. But certainly, for some reason or other, he really threatens them. Certainly don't agree with everything. But it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, I told somebody, I said, well, you know, give me a week, give me a month, give me a year. My opinions will probably change. Is that not the sign of an intelligent man? Where he can be mature enough and self-reflective enough to have a maturation of his ideas and his opinions? It's not a bad thing. How did Jesus Christ exercise power? How did Europe get changed from whatever it was before the time of Christ to literally Christendom? How did Europe become Christendom? I don't know when people stopped talking about Christendom and they started talking about the West. But it used to be called Christendom. And praise God for that. The white race is Christendom. Oh, you can't say the white race is because that's your racist. Again, the regime of power. How did Europe become Christendom? Preachers. Men opened up their mouth and they spoke. Okay, that's it. That's it. Were there miracles and healings and casting out demons? I will presume so. But they opened up their mouth and spoke, even when it was going to cost them their lives. That's how Europe became Christendom. They opened up their mouth and spoke. Jesus Christ is the example. He opened up his mouth and spoke. And you know who hated him and murdered him? But it didn't stop him. His disciples were terrified, rightly so, terrified, so terrified that when he got arrested, they all fled. Soft power was not enough to contain Jesus Christ, so they moved on to hard power. Soft power was not enough to contain Jesus Christ. He wasn't obeying the rules. Jesus, you're not permitted to say that. You're not permitted to say you're the Son of God. That's language that we don't approve of, and we're going to start calling you a Nazi and a fascist. Oh, except that was way before Adolf Hitler, wasn't it? So what did they call him? They called him demon-possessed. Back when people knew there was demons. People don't know that anymore. I don't know if the church knows it anymore. But they said, oh, he's demon-possessed. He's saying that by the power of Satan. Now we say, oh, he's a Nazi, he's a fascist, he's Adolf Hitler. He's a racist. It's the same TTPs by the same group of people. Same tactics, techniques, and procedures by the same group of people. I hope this is making sense to you. I'm going longer than I thought I would. But why not, right? Control their speech. And one of my heroes, I got a lot of heroes, but one of them is Peter. You know, and probably like many people, Peter reminds me in many ways about my own life. Certain point you back off and you're afraid, say, is it worth it? Is this what I'm supposed to do? You know, do I really go do this? Because, you know, there's a bridge that you can go over from which you cannot come back. There's bridges that you go over from which you cannot go back. It's called crossing the Rubicon, if you know about that. Caesar had to make a decision. If he brought his legions back over the south of the Rubicon, he was a traitor, and his head was forfeit. And Caesar made that decision. He crossed the Rubicon. There was no going back. You know what? What's a man if he can't cross his own Rubicon? Is he a man or is he a sheep? Peter was terrified. He said, listen, I got to rethink this. Jesus is arrested. Peter's like, he's rethinking his whole life. He's going, oh my God. He said, I need some time to think about this. He said, I don't know the guy. I don't know the guy. I mean, this was tough. This was tough. But he came around. He came around and he said, no, my life's not worth it. It's not worth it to live my life in submission to the Antichrist, Peter decided. Peter decided, I would rather be dead and submit to the Antichrist, which was in power then, according to St. John. Even now there are many Antichrists. So on the day of Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit filled these men with power, Peter stood up and spoke, knowing that it would cost him his life. Knowing that it would cost him his life. And eventually it did. Eventually it did cost him his life. They crucified him too. He crossed that Rubicon. And how did he change the world? He opened up his mouth and he spoke. And that is what I demand from those of us loyal to Jesus Christ. This is not a morality club. Sorry, this is not a morality club. If you want to join a morality club, go join AA, or I don't know, join something. Go reread, please reread the Gospels, and you tell me that this is not a morality club. We swear allegiance to Jesus Christ. We swear allegiance to him and his words. How can you say you have allegiance to Jesus Christ when you deny his very words? John 8:44, Revelation 2:9, Revelation. All these churches have all these seminars on the book of Revelation. 14 weeks on the Revelation. But they'll deny the words of Jesus Christ in Revelation 2:9 and Revelation 3:9. They'll deny. I've never heard sermons on these, on the words of Jesus Christ in Revelation 2:9, Revelation 3:9. John 8. Never heard a sermon on them ever in my entire life. Why? Why? People are terrified that they're going to be subjected to punishment. And it's real. The punishment's real. I don't deny that. Take your average, I don't know. I don't even know what an average church is anymore. And the preacher stands up and he starts preaching that what Jesus Christ said in John 8:44 and what he said in Revelation 2:9, Revelation 3, how many members of a congregation are going to walk out the door? It's going to cost them a lot of money. And then you're going to have the local newspaper and the local TV shows show up accusing you of being anti-Semitic and racist and homophobic. Now, there's a few pastors out there that are accused of being homophobic. And kudos to them. Soft power is when they tell you what to say and what not to say. You remove the Bible from society. You destroy the Ten Commandments. And you put in a false morality. Don't be racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, divisive, and anti-Semitic. And you enforce it with lack of promotional potential. You're not going to get a job. You're not going to get a. You can't join a club. Demonetized, debanked. We live in a totalitarian society. We already listen. The people living in North Korea don't think they live in a totalitarian society. They don't, but they are, and they do. The people living under Castro in the 60s and 70s in Cuba didn't think they lived under a totalitarian society, but they did. Same in the Soviet Union. And here we are in the United States of America. We live in a totalitarian society where we're told what we can and cannot say, what we can think and what we cannot think, and we submit to it and say, oh, isn't our democracy great? You live in a totalitarian society. And the churches are part of the problem because they've gone along with the government totalitarian antichrist agenda. They want to be friends with the world. They make themselves at enmity with God and an enemy and a traitor to Jesus Christ. Fritz Bergen, wrapping it up, bloodandfaith.com.